Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host. Her favorite Beatles song is I Saw Her Standing There, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you create unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. Now, last week on the show, we had Ken Bergen sharing his strategies on how he's using virtual events, in particular webinars, to really supercharge business growth. So if you want to figure out how to sell out your webinars, you're running these online events and need some ideas, hook back and listen to episode 135. Now, today on the show, we've got Mark Bowden. And if you're thinking, who's Mark? Well, you're in for a treat. First of all, I interviewed him back in episode 102 of this podcast, and it was the most popular, the most downloaded episode on my YouTube channel. It's the most watched video, and he is back today. Now, Mark is a leading expert on body language. And the last time we spoke, like I said, was back in January. We spoke all about body language IRL in real life. He said some absolute truth bombs in that episode that surprised many of us. I think as facilitators, we think our job is reading the room. And he says there's not much point in doing that. You shouldn't read the room. In fact, there's some things that you can do, which he also shares in this episode, to figure out whether your participants are enjoying the experience and getting value from it. So yeah, it is actually pretty funny. Well, is it funny how things can change and shift in 34 episodes? So the focus on this conversation was all about, you guessed it, what can we do to build our connections virtually using body language? And the answer is actually more reassuring than you think. So Mark Bowden, like I said, he's been voted the number one body language professional in the world for 2 years running, and he's passionate about giving your audience the most influential and persuasive communication techniques to stand out, win trust, and gain credibility. Mark, as you'll hear in this interview, is inspiring, energetic, engaging, and entertaining. And his talks and training programs not only educate, but have proven life-changing in helping people and organizations grow across all industries and sectors. His work is consistently invaluable to sales and leadership teams, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, and prime ministers of G7 powers. He was also an orc in Lord of the Rings in the third installment. And as an FYI, there was, I don't know if you remember the Nike football ad with the streaker running across the football, that soccer pitch. I think it came out when I was a teenager, so we're talking about 20 years ago. Mark was the streaker in that video. How cool. He doesn't have that in his bio, but I found out. So from my perspective, you know, Mark has been there, done that. He's spoken on all these stages, worked with prime ministers, but my favorite thing about him is how funny, down to earth, and comfortable he is to be around. If you listen to the show, you'll know that Yuri, one of my previous guests, and I are working together on a program called Virtually Possible. We opened doors last week. So I thought I would actually hand over the microphone today to the Virtually Possible crew and invite them to ask Mark some questions. So a big thank you to all of those in Virtually Possible who could make it live and who felt comfortable coming off mute to ask Mark a question. You kept this fabulous group interview going, and I salute you. I joked on social media that Mark just makes you feel at home, and even though we're at home already, but there's something super comforting about him. He's interested in people, and you can pick that up without even seeing him use his body language. But if you are keen, we do refer to how he's moving and what he's doing with his hands on this one. So you can watch the video replay. I'll link to it in the show notes for this one. So the YouTube video, show notes, a link to contact Mark, all the other details you need are over at firsttimefacilitator.com/136. And of course, if you'd like to continue the conversation when the podcast is over, join our community of over 980 facilitators from all over the world on our free group called The Flipchart. I hope you love this sequel, this comeback tour interview with Mark Bowden. Send me a tweet at Leanne Hughes or at TruthPlane and let us know what your favorite takeaway was from this one. Okay, now onto the show. I'm so delighted to welcome back to the First Time Facilitator podcast, Mark Bowden. Now, Mark, I don't know if you know this, but the episode that I recorded with you is the number one most downloaded episode. So what has that done for your career?
I don't know. I wasn't tracking it. That's brilliant. Yeah, who knows? I should check if there was an uptick. I'm giving you no money if there was. You're getting no commission out of me at all if there was. Listen, I'm always just happy just to share what I'm up to and help people out, especially people facilitating, because it's hard. It's really hard to do. Really hard. And anything I can do to help, especially now, because if facilitating live was hard, this is like, let me just start this off. Stick with it. Keep going, because most people are going to fall off. Most people are not going to be able to manage this. If they had something of a start in facilitation, my guess is hitting this wall of how do I do it by video, most people are going to go, right, I'm out of this. I'm not going to upskill. I don't want to do this anymore. So it's great to have people here, because my guess is you're here because you're going, I'm keeping going. I want to keep on doing this. Let's keep on going. So Leanne, let me help you with this, and I owe you no money.
Awesome. Sorry for putting you on the spot there. Now, what I think, you're absolutely right. So we've got members of the Virtually Possible community that are on the call. And I think we've all been through that sort of change wave where we're like, okay, this thing will blow over soon. I can just wait until we get back to face-to-face. And in fact, Mark, the conversation that we had previously was all about that face-to-face workshop environment. So now we're sort of hustling and moving and seeing what works online, and definitely finding it that body language is a test for us. I've got some questions that have been brought in for people that couldn't make it live. One is from Mariah, and she was saying, in a virtual session, it's really difficult to read the body language of people on the call. So what can we do to compensate for this? Is there anything that we can do to take back control with our voice, our pace? Mark, you're very good with using your hands. I'm trying to be like you on this call already. Yeah. Watching the video. What can we do to compensate for the fact that we don't have that instant reinforcement?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll come in a moment to what I might be doing with my body language to make sure that I'm engaging you. But let's talk about that thing of what can we do in order to read the audience, in order to get a sense of, are they engaged or disengaged? And previously in the live situation, we would be picking up so much unconsciously, and a lot of it would default into negatives anyway. And we can go into that a little bit, but ultimately I can't hear you move, all of you move right now. And if we were live, I'd literally be able to hear you move. I would feel the air move as you move around. There would be some quite unconscious signals that would be coming to me that unconsciously I would be reacting to. And so this feels very much like I'm flying in the dark, and it feels relatively antisocial in that you showed up in 2D, but there's so much information missing. Now, even if I were live with you, I would be saying to you, and I said this to you before, Leanne, stop reading people's body language. Yeah. Like, don't do it. Don't do it, because you're going to default to a whole bunch of negatives. I'm not going to go into the reasons why, because you can go back to that podcast and understand. Because all I'm going to do is reiterate, don't read it via video either. It's even worse. It's just an overwhelm of information. So I'm going to default to a lot of negatives. Here's what I need to do to understand what's going on in your minds right now. Are you engaged with this? Are you not engaged with this? And Leanne, I'm going to start with you, just because we've been talking already, and I never want to pick on anybody who doesn't want to join in. But what for you has been most insightful? I know I've only been talking with you for a few minutes right now, but what already has been useful for you about what I've said so far? Give me a little bit of feedback around that.
Well, to be honest, it's probably what you were doing before we even hit record. And just to share right. that with everyone that's listening now, that this part would have been edited out. Mark arrived at the call 5 minutes early. So that podcast guests don't usually do that. He arrived early, like facilitators do to their workshop. As soon as he came in, I got to be lazy. Mark just took over, and he was welcoming people in and talking to them and asking them questions and was very proactive. So that was a really cool thing to observe. Thank you, Mark.
Perfect. Okay. So what I did there, rather than trying to read Leanne's body language around, is she engaged, disengaged? Does she like the content? Does she not like the content? Where should I go with this? I just ask her. I just go, what has been most useful for you so far? What are you engaged with? And she gives me direct verbal feedback around that. Now, she could be lying, but there's all of that. And I could do interrogation and interview, and I could look at her body language, and I could go, hang on, though, tell me a little bit more about that. That's totally antisocial for this situation. I'm facilitating here. I'm not an interrogator. I'm not an interviewer. That's other parts of my life, okay? So in this situation here, I'm just trying to get some strong, direct feedback of how's it going for Leanne at the moment? And then I could open it out, because what I want you to notice there is when Leanne gave me feedback, I was there doing lots of accepting body language and lots of accepting sounds and words around that. So what you saw there, everybody else watching, was a trial there of, here's what Mark does when you talk to Mark and give feedback. Now, it's one point of data, but it was probably strong enough and good enough that your unconscious mind has gone, you know what, I think it would be okay to join in. Mm. So next time when I say, hey, who's got some thoughts and comments or observations, most likely somebody else will unconsciously go, I think it's safe for me to offer something out there. And again, what you'll see is the same behaviors of me accepting what you say. Doesn't necessarily mean I'll agree in the end. I might say the exact opposite of what you put forward. You won't notice that, because you'll be nodding along with me as I was agreeing with you. And then I say the exact opposite, you'll still be nodding along. And that's the influence and persuasion of it. But just to reiterate on that, Leanne, I'm trying to lead the behavior, not read it, because the best indicator of how you're thinking and feeling and performing right now will be how easy is it and nice is it to mirror my behaviors, my performance, and come along with me. So I'm trying to keep my behavior strong and positive, so you'll get more likely to join in with that. Hope that makes sense to you, Leanne. Give me any feedback on that or on further questions, whatever you want to do.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right. That's why our state as a facilitator, managing our own energy, is so important. And that's the thing. A lot of us come in with an attitude of, when we jump into virtual workshops, like, we're thinking this isn't going to be as good. I don't even want to do this. And that then comes out in the way that we behave on a webcam. Now, question from Wanda, who's over in Barcelona, and he was asking about that. Now, Mark, we've never met in real life, so
no,
I don't know what you're like. Like, every time I see you, you're on a stage or you're on one of these calls. And his question was all about our gestures, our facial expressions, and how much do we need to ramp that up or ham it up in front of a webcam? Is it, you know, if we're normal in real life, if we're a 5 out of 10 with our body language, do we ramp it up to a 7 to an 11? Like, how far do we go in terms of making it more animated?
Yeah. So my best way to explain this to you is to make you think about when you watch content on video that you like and you enjoy. Okay. Because at the moment, that's what we're up against. Okay. That's what we're up against. I come on here and your brain goes, well, hang on. Normally when I watch video, I get to choose to watch what I want, when I want, as much as I like to watch of it. And if I want to switch to something else, I get to do that. And I get to do my email at the same time and go to the bathroom if I want to. Like, you're in charge normally. And suddenly I've come on and, you know, we're going to be together for an hour. And partly your brain goes, well, this is not on. This is not the usual deal. When I watch my screen, usually I'm in charge of this. And also your brain goes, usually this is pretty animated. It's going to change scene a lot. Lots of different people will talk. There'll be kind of drama will happen. And if I want to interact with this, my interaction is I switch to something else. That's your normal situation. And what most people are doing when they get here's what's happening with most people. Let me just show you what's happening with most.
Oh, nice.
This is what we're getting with most stuff. Yeah. And just see how engaging this is. You can't see my gestures because I'm so close. Because I'm using my laptop as a laptop. It just so happens that I'm on a video call now. I haven't adjusted this in any way whatsoever. Here's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to throw out the papers from my waste paper basket. I'm going to put my laptop on top of that because now my laptop is a camera, not a laptop. I'm going to animate the frame, which means, and I'm not saying you need to animate as much as I do. I'm just giving you a sense of what the difference is when you start to see movement in the frame. Video is a moving visual medium. Yeah, it isn't still pictures and a voiceover. It's a moving visual medium. It is animated, which means anima. It has life. I need to keep showing you that I'm alive. One of the ways that video traditionally stops being a sedative for you is it keeps flicking from angle to angle to angle, person to person to person. If it's just me talking on my own, I've got to make sure I really animate and actually bring in different voices as well. I'd start to be my own devil's advocate and argue with myself and all kind of. But luckily in this situation, I've got Leanne, who I can throw to and go, well, what do you think of this? And it means there's a scene change for you.
I love that.
But ultimately, what I need you to understand is that you are used to seeing moving, animated, lively pictures. And if I don't do that, I'm not conforming to your understanding of what should happen on this screen, and you will switch to something else. Also, it was so easy for you to get onto this call. It's very easy for you to get off. It's easy in, easy out. You're not socially invested. You didn't walk here. You didn't pay for a ticket to get on a plane. You're not sitting next to one of your colleagues, like shoulder to shoulder, especially the colleague who maybe hired me. So you're not there going, I better really show that I'm really interested in this because I'm sitting next to the person with power who hired this person. So I better show that I'm liking their decision at the moment. So you've got very little social engagement, which means I've got to animate, I've got to socially engage you, I've got to make you know that I know you're there, and then you're most likely to feed back with me and engage with me. So Leanne, thoughts about that? Any questions?
Yeah, well, I guess now it's funny, you basically at the beginning you said don't look at everyone's nonverbals, but the second that you switched to that webcam, to your laptop webcam, and you were just that talking head on it, everyone laughed. Like, I could see everyone just like grinning because we've all been on those calls. We've all been that person, right, that's just hopped on.
And,
like, you know, just I love that you bring in scene changes. That really talks to contrast. So in terms of contrast, I mean, let's bring in a third character here. I'd like to move over to Steph, who's going to come off mute and ask you a question.
Lovely. Thanks, Steph.
Thank you. You also don't need to tell me twice to use my hands as you're seeing, so this is good. The question I have for you, which links really nicely to the previous point you made around the scene changing, I think, and also the habit to just sort of stick your laptop on and turn on the webcam kind of thing. Do you have a thought or some views on whether you should be sitting or standing? So again, I think a lot of people, they're sat at their kitchen bench or they're sat at the dining table or in their bedroom. What is the power of elevating and standing up?
Yeah. So let me show you that. I've not got my radio mic on at the moment. If I were doing a keynote with you right now, because I really every time demonstrate, here's what it's like standing up, here's the benefit of it, I would have a radio mic on. So I don't. So when I stand up, I'll talk a little bit louder. But you'll notice there's kind of a benefit to this. You can see more of my body, you can see my open palm gestures at navel height, it's good, it's trustworthy. You can see how big the space is that I'm in. It looks optically quite big. It's not that big, but the camera makes it look optically pretty big. Here's the tricky thing, is that we lose intimacy. What the camera does, okay, cameras do two things really, really well. They do wide shots really well, and they do close-up really well. Mid-shot is a bit tedious for a camera. So that's why, you know, you see in a great film, you know, it's bit accessible to saying, what, no Red Sox? Are they so, yeah, I know, I'm breaking my own rules around this. So in a film, you know, we'll start with a big opening shot so you can see the big context, and then you gradually you come into close. Here's the interesting thing about these cameras is they do close up really quite well. And I managed to get into personal, even almost intimate space with you straight away, which in a normal facilitation, I would never be able to do. I've got some skills that mean I can move in pretty quickly and not disturb you and freak you out, because I've got some countermeasures to that and some maneuvers that I can make. But ultimately, I start off in personal space with you. And that triggers you into a sense of intimacy. And in this position, because my mic is right here, I can like tone my voice right down. I can speak to you in a very kind of personal way. And if I talk to just one of you in a really personal way, my guess is you all kind of feel that personal nature to it. Mm. So this is what the camera does really well. Would I stand and do stuff? Yeah, I would. But I think this is where the real benefit is, in the close-up shot. So do what you like and vary it. I can see some good reasons to go, look, I'm going to do some stuff closer. I'm going to do some stuff mid-shot with you. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to maybe get a whiteboard out. I might do some big diagrams up here. I'm going to come back to you here. I can see the benefit in doing a stand-up meeting or a stand-up facilitation for a period of time in order to elevate the energy, get people thinking, get people a bit faster moving because they're standing up. For me, I'm sitting down a lot. I'm doing this all day. You know, you all know how tiring this can be. And I do like to lean on the desk. And it does mean that I'm supported when I'm trying to do this intimate behavior with you. Mm. So I hope that answers your question, Steph, and gives you enough to go on there and some good reasoning around any of that. Leanne, what else? Yeah. Thoughts, questions?
Yeah, we've got a follow-up from Laurie on that. So Laurie, would you like to come off mute and ask Mark a question?
Sure. I think you did answer it as well, Mark, because I know for me, I do keynote and I also do training. And so yeah. I just did a keynote presentation where, and that's why I was curious, I see you from head to toe stepping back, whereas yeah. I was just, you know, waist level when I was standing doing my keynote. So I was able to move in and get closer and more intimate. And then when I went and I sat for the rest of the day doing a virtual training, which was much longer, it was sitting and, you know, being able to interact that way. But I also like what you said is still, you know, whether it may be in the training, getting up, moving down. But I'm curious with that feet and far away, tell us a little bit more about that positioning.
Yeah. So I think what you're hinting at there, which I think is spot on, is the idea of, can you get some variety in there? You've got the possibility of variety. Why not use that possibility? So I think what we've got to look at is, what is the potential meaning within that variety? Again, there's a sense there of intimacy when we get close. Like, we can talk about stuff that's maybe a little more challenging. I can get you to open up a little more, like tell me personally how this affects you or what have you. Then I might want to jump up and go, okay, so let's look, and I might want to kind of map stuff out for you. So let's look at the transitions of this. If we start off in this state over here of not quite knowing, you know, how to best perform on video, I think all of us have moved forward a certain way on this. Where I want us to get is over into this position here where we really understand what we're doing and we're super confident about it. So let's go to content that's going to really help you with that position there. So what I'm trying to create there is a dynamic around it. So there's, you know, it's difficult for me to put down rules because rules are terrible and principles are excellent. And so my principle there is the space has meaning. Try and use the space in a meaningful way. Create meaning around the space. Like, I'm looking at your space, Laurie, there, and you know, already there's meaning for me in the bookshelves. There's potential meaning for me in the chair right at the back, meaning for me in the desk. And I'm going, you know, what might that meaning be? So I would just be exploring that and seeing what's possible. I hope that answers your question. I think, Kevin, you wanted to jump in on something. Is that correct?
Yeah, sure. I guess my first question, Mark, might be, so what does the Wayne's World background mean in that context?
Well, look, you know, I got no problem with fun backgrounds because they're a lot of fun. And you notice it like initiated me because there are objects in there that I was interested in. I think backgrounds that are virtual, for want of a better word, as long as they've got something in it that would help me understand something that you value. Mm. Yeah, it helps me understand you. Yeah, so look, I've seen people put up the desert, you know, the island in the back of them, and that can be fun. But if they don't like going to that island for their holidays, or it's just like, it's just an arbitrary kind of thing there. But if they're able to say, okay, so here I am in a place that I would love to be right now. Unfortunately for all of us, we may not be always in the places we would love to be. But I thought I was just going to sit on this island with you and start the day here because it makes me feel kind of refreshed and optimistic about the day. So that now I've got context. Now I see, okay, we're valuing optimism, we're valuing being in a place that we enjoy. So I think you've got to make these virtual backgrounds have meaning. Mm. And what's great about backgrounds where I can actually see detail is that I can understand something about what you value. Like, for example, in Laurie's background there, the heart shape is very visible. Like it's one of the most visible things. So I've got to expect that there's something about whatever that means to Laurie, but that's important. Okay. So, and I might be able to interview around that. I might be able to bring that in. And if you're really clever about being able to do your interview. So I'm noticing there, Laurie, I think I see one of my friend, Michael Bungay Stanier's book there next to the heart. I think that's Do More Great Work. Is that
Coaching Habit?
No, sorry. That's what one is that? Oh yeah, The Coaching Habit. The Coaching Habit. Laurie, my guess is you've read that, or you've jumped into it, or you've heard Michael speak. What for you has been most impactful, if anything, about that particular book? Is there anything that comes to mind for you around that?
What I loved about his book is being a fellow coach. It's a simple read and reminder of really powerful outcomes that you can have by asking simple questions and setting a great setting.
Yeah, perfect. I love that. I love the simplicity of that as well. What I love about that book is just how simple and doable the things are. And what I hope about our work together is I'm going to give you some really clear, really simple, really doable actions that you can do that kind of emulate the way that Michael's put that simplicity together. So notice what I did there. I pick out an object that I might have some understanding of. I'm okay about getting it a bit wrong. In fact, I might get it wrong on purpose because it's not much fun if I'm the expert on everything. So in that particular situation, I get the book title wrong and give somebody a chance to instantly get, you know, have one up on me. Yeah. I then, because that lowers my status, then I then go, okay, give me your opinion on this. Yeah. I then take some key elements of that opinion. I pick on the idea of, say, simplicity, because that there was a lot of gestures on what we call batons on simplicity. So I go, here's my gamble. My friend Laurie, she values simplicity. Okay, so I'm going to feed that back and I'm going to go, so I hope this is simple for you. Yeah. And so I'm trying to mirror those values. Does that make sense, Laurie?
Absolutely.
Yeah, lovely.
Great job. I was just going to say that I love how you echo the, you know, it's like you're using different connotations. So you're still connecting that language with Laurie throughout the whole thing. And it kind of reminds me of some old school sales and body language and LMPs and all that, which is really cool. But you forget, you know, you maybe just do it naturally and that's how you connect and rapport. But when you're seeing it done and broken down like that, that was really powerful. Thank you for that. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's great that you mentioned Alan's and Barbara's work because, I mean, you know, they are godmother and godfather of a lot of the work that we do. Of course, you know, Alan is a super Aussie guy and absolutely hilarious. Do you know he wrote a joke book? He's got, I don't know whether you've ever met Alan, but he has an extraordinary mind. He's one of these people where you meet him and you go, oh, you're much more than just this kind of body language guy. He's got this incredible mind. going on there. And he lives amongst some kangaroos out in the middle of what seemed to me the middle of nowhere, but maybe everything's in the middle of nowhere. But last time I spoke to him, he was like, have a look out the window, look, kangaroos. And I'm like, wow, it's fantastic. So yeah, it's all about trying to connect as much as you can. Build the connection. Maybe the content comes a little later. Maybe build the connection, get to the content through the connection. We've got to make this as social an act as possible, because otherwise it's super antisocial. I got to push the social aspect of this. Otherwise, we're going to get nowhere on content. You won't accept it. Other thoughts, questions, observations, yeah, Leanne, from anybody?
Just Mark, on that. Because what I'm sensing with people that are moving virtual is they're all going straight to what is the tech hack. But what you're telling us is no. It's all about basic human fundamentals. Like you said, the mirroring, making people feel accepted, the fact that you're even lowering your status on purpose. These are things that you don't need to learn another tech tool to do. So I love that. quick question for me, and then we've got Kevin, Steph coming up as well. Anyone else, let us know in the chat if you've got questions. Mark, you've alluded to this a little bit earlier, and we spoke about it on the last show because I was like, oh my gosh, where do you have this energy? And look, for me, I get a lot of energy from being out and with people. Now I'm contained within four walls and I've got to ramp up my own energy. I mean, this is the end of the day for you. You've probably been on these calls all day. How are you?
I got another one after this.
Oh my gosh. So how do you maintain your energy?
My fourth today.
What? And are you still like this the whole time? Like, how do you do it?
Oh no, you should see me afterwards. Literally, I come out of this room. Tracy, who wrote Truth and Lies with me, who's my wife as well.
Yeah.
I usually walk out the room and she goes, are you all right? Are you dying?
You're human. Like, oh, good.
Oh. I turned 50 this year. So that should be a killer thing by any stretch of the imagination. But for those of us who are feeling it a little bit more, everything aches a little bit, you become less indestructible, that just that little bit less indestructible. So yeah, the energy is up, but I'm not like this in real life. I'm working.
Yeah, that's exactly, I'm the same as well. Yeah, people don't want to see me once I click that end button. So Kevin, you had a follow-up question, then we'll move to Arlene and Steph to sort of finish.
Sure, thank you. Mark, you talk a lot about the primitive brain in the four categories. And I wonder if you could share with us a little bit about the primitive brain in a virtual environment and how that works and how we best might be able to utilize that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we make judgments about people instantly. And my work revolves around the idea that there are four categories that we get to put people into very instantly. Are they a friend? Are they going to be a benefit to us? Are they a predator? Are they going to be a risk to us, essentially? Is there a potential procreation possible here? Is there a good genetic code that means there's attraction? Yeah. And if none of the above, indifference. And I would say to a good extent, the same thing is happening via video. But actually, I would say via video, because of the modality of this, I would say you're pretty safe. It's very different when you turn up live in front of somebody because you're in their space and you're in sometimes within striking distance. And so their instinct is instantly going, okay, the risk is way higher. There's physical risk and there's social risk going on. Here, there is no physical risk to you. Look, and I'll show you. See how that's like, normally if I did that in your, can you see, you would have an instinctual reaction around that. And you don't, it's like, I don't care. So your brain gets it, okay? It goes, you are physically safe right now. I believe what is overriding in this is what you're used to in this technological modality, which is you are either passive, TV, and I'm looking around us here, and I'm going to gamble that all of us here grew up originally with television, which was, X amount of channels and a certain amount of choice. Certainly, I grew up with only three channels originally, and there's very little choice. So you become very passive. You just go, look, I will just consume whatever is available to me, and there is no interaction, I can't ring up the BBC and go, would you like, I've got a comment for you. I'd like to go live with, that's even going to happen. It's like, no, we've recorded all the programs. We're taking no comments on anything. Mm. We're not interacting with you at all. Okay. So I'm used to this giving me content where I just consume and I become very, very passive. Now, of late, I've become more active, but the active is really about, I know I'm going to choose what I want, when I want to watch it, however much I want to watch. And if I want to double screen at the same time, I will. So there's way more agency around this, but it still hasn't been social. Like, to an extent, social media is a little more social, but it's certainly not social like the live event is social. It doesn't have the social risk. So to kind of sum this up, Kevin, I think what's happening here is disengagement. Here's my gamble. You will disengage. Because of all that, I'm going to lay money that you disengage. So I've got to do everything possible in order to countermeasure your disengagement from me and the content due to how you're used to behaving when you watch a screen. Mm. I hope that makes sense to everybody. And my thoughts around this are possibly not super well formed because I've only been thinking about this, you know, really full on for the last few months, going, so why are people getting Zoom fatigue? Why are they engaging or disengaging? What exactly is this about? Not just the techniques of engagement, but theoretically, why would these techniques work around this? And at the moment, what I just told you there is my best guess around that. And I'm thinking, because I tend to think I'm right, I think my guess is pretty right, though I'm open to discussion on that, because I might get, you know, between us, we might get even more right. Anyway, I hope that answers your question there, Kevin.
That's awesome.
That was great, Mark. I appreciate that. And I think when you look at, you know, number two, which is enemy, and number three, which is, you know, sexual partner, those two are kind of out in this virtual environment yet. So right. Now we're left with indifferent and friend, and boy, we just want friend. So there's going to be automatic engagement, it seems like.
I think you're right. I mean, I can steal your time and therefore show up as enemy, but it's going to be hard for you to predict that in 1/50th of a second from my visual image on the whole. In live, you know, instantly I can provoke that in you. I could do it. People do it accidentally. They provoke people with a predator sense. I know how to put you off me instantly or switch you to friend or, you know, sexual partner. There's a bit more gradation in that on the whole. That's a bit of a tricky, else, you know, I'd be a dating coach, not a, not a communication coach. So that's a little more tricky because, you know, there's a lot more personality and gradations and ideas in there essentially. But you're right. What's my gamble? My gamble is, it's the same as life, indifference. Mm-hmm. Only here, amplified. And it costs you nothing to get on this. It costs you nothing to disappear. Whereas indifference in the live situation, people still sit there. They go, yeah, oh, well, I'm going to, because I took a plane and I'm sitting next to the boss. So, but I don't care about this. In this situation, they're like, oh, I'm going to black screen and I'm heading off somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, I hope that answers the question there.
That's cool. Be interesting to test your hypothesis and to see, like, I haven't really jumped on calls with people in the younger generation, you know, like 10 to 15 year olds, people that grew up with interactive stuff. So I'm wondering if that'd be more interactive as opposed to, I guess, people like us that just consumed media. Arlene, would you like to come off mute and ask a question? I can ask on your behalf, or you're more than welcome to throw it in. She's got a question about making strong connections.
Yeah, lovely.
Arlene, you're on mute.
Okay. I would love to hear more about what can we do to establish really strong connections and build rapport with people quickly so that they feel comfortable, that we're friendly, that this is going to be a great, safe learning environment.
Yeah, okay. So give me some feedback on this, Arlene. What for you, give me like your top three things that would for you say, okay, I think I'm in a safe learning environment? Just give me a little bit of feedback on that. Top three things.
Probably one of the first things would be that the facilitator is exhibiting empathy and warmth. So really good staring down that camera lens and really strong eye contact, I think, would be helpful. Yeah. I think smiling typically too, and not overdone, but some good smiling helps people feel like you're warm and approachable, friendly. You're not going to bite their head off if they have a question.
Yeah.
And then inviting, just actually inviting people in. Probably.
Perfect. Perfect. So I've written those down because they're really important. Let me just deal with the first one, that idea of empathy. So here's what I did just there, which is, again, I'm not going to guess at what's going to connect with somebody else. I need them to give me the instruction manual. Yeah, I need. So I asked for the instruction manual from you. And I said, what for you are the top three? So the little trick there is your brain loves to do hierarchy. Yeah. And if I ask for your top three or your number one, the brain goes, oh, that's exciting. I get to put stuff in an order of preference. And so it really loves to give people the answer. Yeah. It's a classic of interrogation, is when you want somebody to tell you something that they didn't think they were going to ever tell you, you get them to do priority, and they soon, they soon, once you go, so what do you think the top three murder weapons are? Like, oh, gun. Okay. Which one did you use? The gun. Oh. So the idea is that if I get you to do priority, you're more likely to talk to me. And to show empathy, all I do is, just as you said, smiling. So I look down the camera, I nod my head, I do a light Duchenne smile, okay? Oh, and the way to do that is, make sure I'm always doing that, is I've got a little post-it note behind my camera, with a little smiley face on it as well. So that, you know, I'm always reminded, look down the camera and smile. So I smile, I nod my head, I do accepting, open body language. So that gives you a sense that I am empathetic towards your ideas. And then, oh, you know what? I can't even, I don't know whether you can read this, but I write, I'm super dyslexic. I don't even know what I wrote on the third one. What did you say on the third one, Ali?
I think I said invite them in, like openly say,
right.
You know, what would make you comfortable? Tell me what would make this environment great for you.
Yeah, thanks for that. So again, I do it there. I try and invite again and again your input on this. And again, I accept your input on it. Yeah, Arlene, what's your thought?
Okay, was that a legitimate question about your illegible handwriting, or was that a way of inviting me in? Yeah.
No, it's totally legitimate. I had no idea what I'd written there. But here's one of the other things. I'm totally happy. So I'm you know, ranked as number one in my field, like 2 years running in the world. And I've constantly got to remember, lower your status. Don't like lower it, or they will not join in. You will outrank them. They won't like you, or they'll feel too in awe of you, or something else. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a super positive one and a really negative one and everything else in between. So that was just, if it was anything that was thought out, it's that here's an opportunity for me to lower my status around mm-hmm. you and basically go, I can't read and write very well at all. And to go, help me with this. Yeah. So, no con there, but just a good, legitimate reason to use the principle of stop being the expert all the time. Try and be, try and get help from your team, your audience, as much as you can. Hope that makes sense.
Oh, this is gold, Mark. I'm so grateful that you're here, and all of us are just loving it. It's just in the chat. We're like, we're so grateful. Okay, I've got one quick question that I'll throw to Steph for a final question. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, lovely.
Time. I know you've got another call coming up. I loved your video about the German filmmakers and how they were framing their camera using their hands. And I've tried to do it, but like, Mark, my hands aren't as dynamic as yours. Like, I just seem a bit like flimsy. What can I do better to be as strong in framing my camera shot?
Okay. So, and here's what I would say is go onto my YouTube and find the little video I did on the German expressionists and gestures and the frame, because it's quite I think it's quite interesting, it's quite good. And Leanne is going, oh, but I can't do it quite how you're doing it. So I want to guide you to a mentor of mine, Jim Henson, and one of his great fellows, Kermit. Kermit said, take what you've got and fly with it. Okay, so look, watch the video, see what I'm telling you, do your best approximation or what you think is your idea of that, and then go with that. Yeah, don't try and emulate what I'm doing. I'm giving you nudges and hints and big pictures and provocations and big pushes. But wherever you end up based on that, take that and fly with that. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Leanne, you're doing a great job. Your hands come up and you animate. It might not be what I'm doing, but I do what I do really well.
Yeah.
I want you to do what you do really well, given the principles that I'm putting across. And the principle is, the frame must be animated, and the moment energy leaves the frame, the moment anything goes out of the frame, your attention and eyesight goes out of the frame. Now, if I were live on stage, the wide angle means I can get really big with my gestures and they're still within your peripheral vision. But in this frame here, in this optic, we've got to take account that the energy has to stay within the frame. So do that as best as you can.
Yeah.
Hope that makes sense.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll pop a link to that video in the show notes. It was amazing.
That'd be great.
Steph, final question.
Great.
Thanks, and Mark, first of all, I think you've summed up that online or virtual facilitation is facilitation. Like, all of the tips and things you've given, 100% facilitation tips. They're not virtual facilitation tips, which I love. And I think this is where people get really stuck, as Leanne said, on the technology and forget that actually it's all about connection and, you know, then the content, etc. But my question is what's next? I think we're already seeing over the last, you know, particularly the last probably 1 or 2 months, as people going, right, we're doing this for a while. You know, the first few months were like, all right, we'll get through and we'll do what we can. And now we're like, all right, this is going to be a thing for a lot longer. People are setting up their like home studios and all of this kind of thing to do and getting into the tech. Where do you see the virtual facilitation trend, if we call it that, going? Like, what's going to be in our future in the next sort of 6 to 12 months, do you think, around the quality or some of the things that we need to be thinking about?
Okay, so let's think about tech, because I'm already seeing all kinds of facilitators and trainers and speakers kind of upping their tech, and sometimes not realizing the platforms can't deal with your you know, if you get a decent, I've got one here. Hang on, just stay there a second. If I get one of these, you know, which has got a beautiful, beautiful portrait lens on it, and it'll give you that lovely, you know, bokeh effect where the back will be, all of this area will be all blurry and I'll be super sharp. The frame rate will drop to about 15 frames a second as my video card and the network tries to deal with that amount of information. And also, you won't be able to see so clearly my context as well. So I'll be floating in a blurry, and for the beauty of you going, you know, isn't Mark's face so crisp and clear? You'll lose the animation and you'll lose the context. So what I suggest you do is get as good as you can technologically, but without pushing it to a level whereby platforms can't deal with it. Now, to get the quality that you're seeing here, and if you see a quality that you go, oh, that's quite good, I quite like that, this is a PTZZ Optics webcam. They usually make stuff for actually, I think they mainly supply kind of mega churches with cameras so those churches could broadcast everywhere. This is the webcam that they make. It's quite good and very cheap. And that's my upgrade. Sound-wise, I have upgraded quite a lot because sound is often more important than vision, simply because of some reasoning around how the brain works, which I won't go into right now. But ultimately, you don't even need to go that far. It's all about fail safe and all about trying to get as good a quality over a whole day, a week, a month, a year as I can. So I would look to upgrade slightly on your camera if you can. I would really look to upgrade on the environment that you are projecting to people. I think the future might be about, I don't think the future is about quality and equipment getting any better. In fact, I'm purposely trying to keep my quality and equipment enough like yours, the participants. So I'm not outranking you all the time. I want you to feel and be like me, not for me to be the elevated. I want us to join together, not for you to look up to me and go, that's fantastic. I want you to feel like me. I think the future is maybe around, when do we make a choice or help our clients make a choice as to when we do go live with a facilitation, when we do go virtually, and when we do go, I'll just record a video and train you via a video. And helping them understand the real benefits of those modalities, because there's a lot of benefit to that. So for example, I had a client today who's saying, I want you to do 2 45-minute sessions, and we're gonna pre-record those, and then I want you to be online for the thing. And I said to them, well, I'm totally into the pre-recorded thing because it's very safe from your point of view. And, you know, I don't have to show up twice. I only record once and there we go. But I said, look, the reality is I'm talking to people about how they do live communication. And I'm just a little bit concerned that if I'm not live, they're going to go, yeah, but Mark's not live. So why would we pay any attention? So I said, I would rather price this up so that you feel like we can do 2 live sessions, because I just want you to have, I want your people to have the best content, because I want you to keep coming back to me for more content. So in that situation, the future for me was, I'm talking them out of doing a recorded session. I'm talking them into doing a virtual facilitation, because I think that's more like how their meetings should be and virtual conversations should be. Showing up live is not, that's not an option. Eventually, I don't know when, but eventually that will be an option. And then I think we're into an interesting area where we go, look, do what you like with this. It's your budget and you can only spend what you can spend. But I recommend you spend that extra amount. That means I show up live for this moment here, this bit. I'm going to send you a bunch of videos to do, which are in my stock. I'll send you a bunch of videos. We'll do some facilitation around those virtually. And here's the bit we've got to do live because, you know, because that's the best modality for it. I think having your clients used to those different modalities now and you helping them understand the benefits and the economics of it, I think that's the smart future around this. I don't know what other people's thoughts and feelings are because I'm as new to this as you are.
Yeah, it's certainly been a real leveler, and I think we're all trying to figure it out. And I certainly am detecting that trend as well. And I see a few people nodding their heads as well. I think it's about us thinking what will work best, what the outcome is, and then designing for that. Mark, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. You're one of the rare people that do come back. Steph's been on the show twice, actually. We've loved everything that you've shared today. This will be amazing for all of our listeners, members of the community in terms of, and I like what Steph said, it's all about just designing for great facilitation. Tech comes second. Mark, you're an absolute legend. I love just seeing and talking to you and connecting with you virtually. I think you do an amazing job. Thank you for bringing the energy. We're so grateful that you were here today.
My pleasure. Anytime you want me back, just give me a call. I'll be here.
Lovely. Thank you. If anyone else wants to stay on the line, we can debrief. Mark, we'll let you go.
Thanks for having me. Bye, guys.
Thanks. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks so much for sticking around. You've reached the end of another episode of the First Time Facilitator podcast. Connect with the show at firsttimefacilitator.com or follow me on Instagram at Leanne Hughes to find out what I'm up to during the week. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with someone who will also appreciate the insight. And make it easier for yourself and subscribe to the show in your podcast player of choice. Thank you so much for listening, and chat to you next week.